Welcome, everyone, to our Podomatic podcast, The A Word. This is your host, Glenn Watson, known as All Babies Are Atheists on YouTube.
And I am Kate Farr, also known as Bionic Dance on YouTube. Hello.
Hello. So, okay, this is going to be our last podcast until after Christmas for anyone who celebrates that. So, for everyone, before we forget, Happy Hanukkah, wonderful Kwanzaa, or whatever they use as the beginning of that. And, of course, Happy Holidays and Merry Christmas.
And Happy Yak Shaving Day to all you Ren and Stimpy fans.
Your week has been a very interesting one, I know, as mine as well, on YouTube.
Yeah, it's true. I was kind of involved in a couple of scuffles. Most of those are over now. I think rather more interesting, though, is the fact that Venom Fang X seems to be back. We'll probably talk more about that later. For those of you who don't remember Venom Fang X, he was the poster boy for creationist stupidity, as dubbed by Thunderfoot.
Yes, we'll definitely go into that in detail for any of you who are not privy or have forgotten his name over the last 12 months. But we basically, myself and Kate, when we talk about our show, we brought up a couple of other topics. We have had some dealings with a couple of, the best thing I can say is knobs, a great Canadian and American saying, knob, because they're about as smart as a doorknob when it comes to really, and about as easy to deal with as well. I know that you've had your dealings with Vodka Haze, is it? And what was the other fellow, Thunder? Or
Thunderbolt, like 91 or something. Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah. I just called him Dunderbolt.
Of course, attached directly at their hip was Watcher Azazel. In the whole thing about, we talked about in a previous podcast, about the definition of the word atheist.
Yeah, and the word atheist, it's not as sticky a word as some people like to think. It really is an umbrella term. And if you modify atheist with various things like hard atheist, soft atheist, all of those sorts of things, it's a very easy term to understand. But some people desperately want to make it that atheist is an explicitly declared atheist, like hard atheism is the only atheism. And you have to declare there is no God, rather than taking more of a tentative position where at the moment I don't believe, but I could be convinced by evidence or anything in between.
And well, what I think is, it seems that they want, much like the people who made the Merriam-Webster dictionary long ago, is the idea is that said, I looked at God and I've turned my back on the idea of God, and that's what atheist means. And that is not what atheist means.
No, not at all.
You could call agnostic, where it says, I looked at the evidence and the jury's out for me, therefore I have no knowledge. But again, atheist is a very simple, it's as simple as it gets. It's like saying you're an unicornist or you know, that you've never played the fiddle, so you're an a fiddler. It's just the absence of a belief or doing something.
That's the literal meaning of atheist. That's what most self-declared atheists mean when they say they're an atheist.
And that's what the dictionary says now.
Well, some dictionaries. Not every dictionary is as enlightened as others. Not every dictionary has gotten on board. And certainly there are some dictionaries that are very partisan, shall we say.
There are multiple definitions.
This is still a fight that needs fighting.
Yeah. For the time being, people, let it die, is what I would ask. Let the argument die. If you believe that we have to look at God or have believed in him and then rejected him to be an atheist, that's fine. Just keep it on your side of the fence. I'm tired of it. I'm sure you are too, Kate.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, most of the people that we've mentioned have either been blocked or have dropped it, because honestly, it got to the point with some of them where it seemed as if they were trolling. Where it seemed as if they were trying to provoke a response rather than genuinely have an intellectual back and forth. Once it gets to that point, there's really not much else you can do but either join in gleefully or say, to heck with you guys, and take off.
Yeah. For the most part, the best definition is pig-headed. We have made our point. You've definitely made your point clearly, concisely, and it's done. In our minds, it is done. They don't want to let it go. There's still a lot of back and forth, and there really shouldn't be. They've had their say, we've had our say. And I know that you don't consider blocking the first thing that you do, much like myself. And you say you're evil, you're not. You and I are both nice people, and we give people 20th and 30th tries at sensibility before we cut them off.
It's, well, okay, at least the part about giving people tries is true. I still say I'm evil. Regardless, yeah, I don't want to block anybody. In fact, the only time I do is if they're either abusive or if it's very clear that they are being pig-headed, that they are not, there is nothing you could say that would ever convince them that they're being dogmatic about it.
Yeah,
At that point, there's really not much else you can do but abandon them.
I think you even made that point in one of your videos so clearly, going, nuh-uh, is what, when it gets down to that, we're no longer in argument, we are in contradiction.
Yes,
It's,
and that is something that I think a lot of atheists are tired of these days. I mean, a large number of us would like to have genuine discussions. Unfortunately, not every theist wants to play along.
no.
In many ways, it's like logic versus ideology. Neither side can win because you're really not speaking each other's languages at all. I would love it if we could just nail down at least our terminology so that we could actually have these discussions without just constantly wrangling about what the heck someone meant when they used a certain word. Unfortunately, I also get the impression that there are a very large number of theist types out there who only want to have semantic discussions, who only want to have these so they can avoid having to face up to the fact that, well, they don't have the facts on their side.
Well, and they don't want to be given anyone else's point of view on it. They have already made up their mind. The whole point of them having a argument, in quotes, is to try to convince you that they're right. They're not there to open their mind and say, I want to hear your side of it, and maybe you might even change my mind. No, they say, look, God is in my life. I am convinced of that, but now I want you to be convinced of that now. And that is exactly what they're doing. They are not here for dialogue. They are here to proselytize. They are here to indoctrinate you in their way of the Lord. And you are not going to get your way with them.
I mean, I have some direct personal evidence of that sort of thing. It's like when you have a discussion with them and they never answer any of your questions. All they do is ask you more of their questions and ignore anything you ask them. They ignore the points you make in favor of trying to force you to defend your beliefs, which they think you can't do. So when you can't defend your position, they think that makes them automatically win. And it really, really, really doesn't work like that. It also shows you that they're not receptive to having their own ideas challenged. It shows you they're not receptive to others' ideas. That's a point where, I mean, I've actually given them a chance. Don't get me wrong. I've actually said to them, look, if you don't answer my questions, I'm not answering yours either. This is not going to be a one-way discussion. Can we actually have a genuine back and forth? Now, I'd say no more than 40% of the time do they go, oh, okay, sorry, ask me your questions, and then genuinely give answers. I've had a very large number of them decide that they will say, oh, ask me your questions. They might answer one question, but then they go back to interrogating you. And I've had a very large number of them just simply ignore my questions entirely, ignore the fact that I pointed out that they're not letting me get my questions in as well. And at that point, there's really nothing you can do but go, I will not be proselytized to. Goodbye.
It's basically shock of God syndrome, as we all know it on YouTube. Is there's a particularly unpleasant character known as Shock of God. He drive well known on YouTube. He drives around on a motorcycle and gives sermons basically in his helmet cam. And what his favorite little meme is, what is that? Give proof that atheism is true and correct, or something accurate and correct.
Give proof and evidence,
Evidence.
which are the same bloody thing, but give proof and evidence that atheism is accurate and
And correct.
correct. Again, the same bloody thing.
And he has gotten hundreds, I'm sure by now, responses from people very genuinely saying, here's my evidence. And each one he has completely dismissed without even looking at them, because he never gives a response back. He just puts a little list on his channel saying, these are the ones that I've won against. He is not into a debate. He is into saying, I won, you lose. Why? Because God's on my side. I mean, that's the kind of argument you get. It's the same with Nephilim Free, who we discussed earlier on another podcast. Truthful Christian, about as far as big an oxymoron as it's ever been. He's a young man who definitely is just parroting what he's heard from the Nephilim Frees, the Ken Hovind, who is a, in quotes, educator who is now in prison. Being educated in a whole different way, I'm sure, Mr. Ken there. I'm hoping he's having a lot of fun. And so definitely quite aware of these people. Now, I don't know, some people have a much harder head than you or I, and they go after these people and actually have these so-called debates. And of course, they come out of it frustrated. The Christians say, I won. And, you know, and I can basically count on one hand the people who've actually had a decent debate. And most of them haven't been Christians. A lot of them have been Muslims. For example, Dawa Films, who has gotten a lot of flack and a lot of credit, depending on what camp you're in. But I will give him credit that he will actually respond to questions. He will give his own religious bend to each and every one, but he will absolutely answer each and every question if you ask him. And he has.
And I certainly respect that. That's for sure. Although I haven't had very many dealings with him. I've had a few, but not many. He's been in a couple of blog TVs I've been in. But I have to say, a religious person who's willing to actually discuss things with you—that's a rarity.
And Muslims, in general, I'm generalizing here, of course, but Muslims, the most of the ones I've seen, the one thing I'll give them credit for is they're very confident in their God, Allah, and they will actually answer your questions, because he was asked, one of the big things was, is that Muhammad took a bride at the age of 9 years old, and people were saying, how do you justify that? It's pedophilia. And he says, no, it's not. You've got to look at the context of the time when girls grew up much quicker and yada, yada, yada. And unfortunately, it did not smell right to anyone who was listening with a sensible mind. You go, no, you can't just whitewash it with that. But at least he did try to give an answer. He actually believes in the rhetoric. I don't really believe that the Shock of Gods and the Nephilim Frees believe in what they're talking about, because they're not willing to defend it in real words. They just basically say, I won, game over, without one bit of actual sincere discussion.
Well, that's the thing, though. I'm not entirely convinced of that. I think it's possible that they do genuinely believe it. The problem is that they don't know how to defend it, because it's entirely faith-based rather than fact-based. Well, we all know how I feel about faith by now, I'm sure. I think faith and playing pretend are pretty much the same darn thing. I mean, they are convinced that they are right. It's just they don't know how to show it.
And I'm not so sure about that myself. It's up for debate. I really don't see a lot of sincerity. Sincerity is not a word I would use if somebody said, define Nephilim Free for me. Sincerity would be one of the last words in my lexicon that I would ever attribute to him. Or to Shock of God or Truthful Christian, any of them. I don't see them being in any way, in my opinion, sincere. And I don't believe they're sincere to themselves either. I think they've sold themselves a lie, and they're not even sure how to get out of it at this point.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, they do seem to take debating as competitive. They do seem to see it as some sort of, almost like a sport in a way. At the same time, I think a large part of it is they are like, we are in a certain club. Our club is awesome. Anyone who's not in our club deserves ridicule. Mm-hmm. And that certainly seems to be their, at least from their behavior, that's the vibe I've gotten. I freely admit I could be wrong on that. That's it's a gut feeling.
And I would say that, you know,
we all know how much we can trust gut feelings, which is to say only sometimes.
I really
do get the impression that they genuinely believe that they are onto something. It may not necessarily be the whole God thing. They may just think, hey, aren't we awesome? And we're in a club for being the same kind of awesome.
Yeah.
That seems to be their attitude.
And you could also say that they feel, well, just being in our club makes us automatically right.
Exactly.
Which is definitely insanity. I don't believe that being an atheist makes me right about anything. And as a matter of fact, when I look at other people who claim to be atheist, I hang my head. And I shake it. And sometimes I ram it against something harder than my head, just to clear that nastiness that I see. And we will definitely be discussing that in depth over the next few podcasts, I'm sure, because I mean that's something that we see. I'm definitely never going to be an apologetic person for any group, and that includes atheism, and I don't think you would be either, Kate.
No, if someone were able to show that atheism is false, I suppose, that there is indeed a God, or even just that our reasoning needs work or something, I will critically examine it. If I find their argument wanting, I'm not going to buy into it. If I happen to find that their argument makes sense, well, doing the right thing would be to try to incorporate this new information into my worldview and reorder everything so that I'm now believing what's correct, because I want to believe as many true things and as few false things as possible. I've heard other people say that, and it makes perfect sense. Sure. So I don't see that attitude in everybody. I see it more in atheists. I see it a heck of a lot less in theists, in believers.
Well, I definitely see a lot of bad behavior in atheists. And that's one of the things I'd like to kind of go on to the next point, is one of the people who has been going against some of your videos, Kate, especially on, you did a video that I probably should have done myself on All Babies Are Atheists, seeing as that is my YouTube name. And you did a wonderful job, but it probably should have fallen to me to take the brunt of the idiocy that rained upon you. And one of the idiots, and I do call him an idiot, not without some care and concern, but it's Ashes is the Raven.
Oh, that guy.
Bonehead, doorknob, but, and I don't use that term lightly. I've never had dealings with him before, but I was tortured to have to see this video because it happened to have my Nom de Plume on there. Where he was basically saying that it's the most ludicrous thing he'd ever heard, that old thing he puts in quotes of all babies are atheists. He says that's absolutely insane. One of the things he used was a paraphrasing of an old quote that's the word mother on a child's lips means God. And that's ludicrous for so many reasons. But his theory was is that babies look up to, and by babies I'm sure he means child, that they look up at their mother, their father, and they see them as their God. And I disagree. I see it as they see them because they have such a limited view of the world, very limited concept of me, you, things, everything's attached to them. They are the universe. So you could say almost that all babies are Buddhist if you were going to put them as anything, because they have sort of that they, we are the universe and universe is us, that sort of thing. I looked up studies of children, of developmental studies of infants, even from in utero, in the womb, to up to when they no longer are being considered a child. And it's generally accepted by everything that I saw that babies do not have a concept of themselves, that I am different from everything else, that if they say, what are you, and they can actually give you an idea, until about the age of 2 to 3 years old. By that time, you are infant, but you're no longer what I would consider a baby. I don't know about you, Kate, but I think baby as being one year old, maybe even two. But once you get past that point, you can call them infant, child, but you begin to get out of that point. We're mincing words here, but I just want to make sure that the definitions are clear.
Well, I mean, I pretty much agree. I might use slightly different words, but I certainly go with the concept you're talking about. I think around about the time that a child starts to walk, and certainly by the time they start to speak, they're definitely no longer a baby, no longer an infant. I think toddler is a great word. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm on board, I think.
Yeah. And basically, like, I looked, and I wanted to give the benefit of a doubt. That's something that people should do when they're in the middle of a debate, is do try to work with people and say, you know, I'm going to, let's just say for the sake of argument, I'm going to try to prove you right and then work my way back. That's actually a very good way to be able to determine things. One of the things I looked up was there's a book by two scientists called Ferrari and Sternberg. They were authors of Self-Awareness, Its Nature and Development. And they basically, that self-awareness is kind of winnowed or broken, distilled down to four traits. One witnesses potential evidence about oneself. So they get to understand what defines the evidence that means that I am me. One is an inner awareness of this witnessing. They get that the thought dawns on them. One has a current awareness in thought of one or more features of one's character or personality, and one brings self-witnessed evidence to bear in judging of this feature or these features. There is a test. Now, I've been trying to remember what the name of the test is. There's actually a test of self-awareness where even animals can actually be found, discover this test. Elephants see it, and so do like a lot of the primates. Is one of the tests they do is they'll put a smudge of something on a primate or another animal's face. They put you in front of a mirror, and if an animal or a person rubs at that exact spot by seeing it in the mirror, they understand of what they are. They're self-aware of who they are. Even if you don't have the proper motor skills, if you're reaching, you see that you are the person in the mirror and back. Babies don't see that. And I believe the whole reason I'm going through this very long discussion about this is because unless you can actually understand what you are, you can't even get the concept of a God. And there was a lot of double talk.
Right. Well, and part of the problem is, I mean, you'll get a lot of theists who try to make that whole claim that babies see their parents as gods. But the truth is that how you see something and whether or not it actually is a god is, they're not the same thing. I mean, I could look upon, say, my stuffed husky Howie as a god. I'd be wrong. So it's not like I'm actually believing in a genuine, honest to goodness God. I actually made a video a while back asking, what is a God? I mean, I can name a bunch of creatures that have been described as God, like Thor, Zeus, Apollo, Ra, Osiris, Yahweh, all of those. I can take a look at the characteristics they have in common. Generally speaking, a certain amount of immortality, though gods have been known to kill gods, a certain amount of magical, mystical power, things like that. There's nothing in there to say how you would distinguish a god from, say, a wizard. I mean, if you were to read David Eddings's Belgariad and Malorian series, it sure sounds like the sorcerers in those books resemble gods, except that there are gods in those books as well. It's all very confusing what a god is even in the first place. Just because an infant looks upon mommy or daddy as a god doesn't mean that the kid has religion, and it doesn't mean they're believing in a god.
And I don't even see it at that point. There was even a lot of woo-woo brought up in Ashes is the Raven's video where they were talking about a genetic memory. That's another thing that, by the way, has been totally debunked. Some animals have a genetic memory. These are the kind of animals, like, say, turtles, when they're hatched from an egg and they never get to see their parent, and they have an autopilot that flips on their brain and says, get to the ocean, and they know how to eat and survive and communicate and fend for themselves from the day that they hatch from their egg. That's not what any human has. Any human who has been raised without some kind of parent is so stunted to the point where they're mentally disabled. They come out of vegetable.
About the only instincts that babies have, human babies have, along those lines, is the suck reflex.
Yeah.
You know, put something in their mouth and they will suck on it. Put something in their hand, they'll try to bring it to their mouth so that they can suck on it. That's about the only instinct a baby
and
has
breathe and digest
besides taking a crap.
Yeah, and that's the lizard brain. That's the primordial brain that every creature has that basically determines things like controlling internal temperature and the most basic, they call it the zombie brain, some people do, because you can actually destroy that, the upper part of the brain that actually controls thought, and these people will shuffle around like a zombie. They will even brush their teeth and do some very simple things, but there's no thought involved. So babies don't get that point, especially within the first couple of months. They're so very basic. They're basically wired to do only the most fundamental things. But worshiping their parent, no. And the whole idea is that the babies look at their parents as a god misses the whole point of why I chose all babies are atheists and why most people say all babies are atheists. They have not been indoctrinated with the garbage that people see. And I do call it garbage, folks. I'm sorry, you know, Christians, Buddhists, Jews, Muslims, it's garbage. Telling a kid that there's a sky daddy who's going to take care of you when you die is disingenuous, and it definitely is damaging to a child. It's as close as I can think of as child abuse to these kids. And the fact is, until a child gets to the point where their ears can pick up what you're saying and actually make an interpretation and fall in for this kind of crap, they are atheists. And that's the
absolutely,
most innocent thing.
Absolutely.
My wish for the world would be to have every adult be an atheist as well.
Well, that's certainly my ideal world as well. However, I mean, okay, I know I'm a little bit alone on this in the atheist community, but the truth is that if someone were to be able to prove to me in an objective, empirical way that yes, a God does exist, I'll believe. Doesn't mean I'll like that fact, and it doesn't mean I'll follow that God, but I can be convinced that such a thing exists. You'd have to work pretty hard at it because, frankly, all the evidence is pointed in the other direction. But
Absolutely.
I know a large number of atheists who are like, nope, there cannot be such a thing no matter what. They're actually dogmatic and closed to the notion, too, which, I mean, okay, there are many ways to be an atheist, but for those of us who have gotten there through empirical, rational, logical, deductive reasoning, I think that's a really horrible position to put yourself in.
It is, and I have to admit that I am, for the most part, convinced that there is no God just from the evidence around me. If it did turn out there was God, again, like yourself, I would have to say, not, especially if it's an Abrahamic God, I'm saying, okay, give me Satan's address. Because frankly, if the book is right, I'm going with the competition. Because
Well,
frankly, all I've seen is brutality, genocide, and hatred, xenophobia, a God that's so jealous of anything that is outside of like adoring it, him with a capital H, that I wouldn't want it.
and I have to admit, I agree. The Christian God, just from the description that I've heard from all of the Bible stories and everything, sounds like a very disgusting individual, and not just from the Old Testament either. But I am, by the same token, if you were able to prove that such a God does in fact exist, well, I would have to find some way to either make peace with that or oppose this God. That's just all there is to it. Part one part of skepticism that I really have to mention is that a skeptic is not a naysayer. A skeptic is not someone who disbelieves in everything. If you are able to prove to a skeptic that something is real or true, they are obligated to believe in it. But that's the thing, though, is that means you may end up believing in things that you are really disgusted with, that you don't want to be true. That's another aspect of skepticism. But a lot of people like to say that a skeptic is just someone who goes, nope, don't believe it, nope, don't believe it about everything. And it's not the
I
case.
hear that too. They say, you're just a skeptic. Well, actually, I am just a skeptic. The amazing Randy is a skeptic. But the thing is, it's one of the greatest Americanisms. That is I'm from Missouri, the show me state. Show me. Don't just tell me. It's like the amazing Randy and some of the wonderful things that he's debunked is like psychic surgery and stuff like that. The way he did it is because he is a trained magician who knows the tricks. And so he says, do it without tricks. Take away your veils and your long sleeves and your little sleight of hands and do it then. Do it in front of me and I'll give you $100,000. And he's had that award out. And that's the ultimate skeptic says, look, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. If you can prove it under controlled conditions, I will give you money. That's all you have to do. Be a psychic and be a telekinetic and move a needle in a vacuum 1 millimeter. That's all you got to do. Come on, if you can actually say move watches around the world, Mr. Yuri Geller, scam artist, you obviously can move a needle in a controlled environment. No? Well, then you don't get my money. And that's what a real skeptic is. He puts his money where his mouth is. He puts other people's money where his mouth is, too.
Well, it's amazing some of the very simple ways he can foil what seems at first like a magical sorceress act. Now, I remember this one guy who was dressed like a martial artist, and he claimed that he could do martial arts, and he would do this funky thing where he'd lunge with his hand at a book, and from about 3 or 4 feet away, the page of the book would turn, just as he throws his hand forward. The thing is that Randy was like, well, I'm pretty sure all you're doing is blowing on that page. So he cracked open like a pillow and poured feathers all around the book and told the guy to try it again. And the guy couldn't do it because he knew that if he were to
He'd be
blow
busted.
through his mustache, the feathers would go everywhere. So yeah, it's amazing how simple some of these scams are.
And they've been
But
around for
that's actually
hundreds of
one of the
years.
places where I find one of the few places where I part company with people like James Randi or Penn and Teller is their definition of the word magic. I mean, they are stage magicians, and I actually saw them have a conversation once where they were talking about how some people would say, no, not your kind of magic, real magic. And they would say, yes, but real magic is fake magic because it doesn't exist. Like real magic in this context being sorcery. And it is kind of frustrating there because what they are doing, in my mind, is sleight of hand, trickery, all of that stuff. Magic, to me, just as a word, as a definition, does refer to sorcery, does refer to that which breaks the natural laws of the world. I recently made a video that was, it got an unusual response, let's just put it that way.
Yes, it did.
I'm sorry?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, well, I was talking about how life is not special. And when I said the word special, and I said this in the video, what I was referring to was the fact that life is not magical, that life is a function of biology, that life is it's purely scientific, that it does not require magic to explain it. And that's what I meant when I said life is not special. But it seemed, I mean, some people really got it, but it seemed like half of the people decided that they had to say, no, I am special. I'm awesome. I'm more than the sum of my parts, and therefore I'm special. And I'm like, maybe you are, but that's not what I meant. And it can be so frustrating when people latch onto a single word and ignore the rest of the context and the information you gave them.
Oh, it's as I've talked to you before, it's the Mr. Rogers complex. And of course, I'm talking about Mr. Rogers, who was of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood fame of PBS, who would put his sweater on every week and look in the camera to all these wide-eyed kids and say, "You are special." And what he meant is, "You are unique and you are better than anyone else for your special reasons." And he created a whole generation, two or three generations by now, of pretty messed up kids who are so surprised when they get out to the real world and everyone else says, "Yeah, you're special. I'm special. We're all special. Now get in line."
Well, it's kind of the way that in some schools, this didn't happen in my school, thankfully. I think mine may have been one of the last generations to not get this. But in schools these days, I hear about how everyone's a winner.
Yes.
You know, it's like the kid who comes in last in the race didn't lose, they were the last winner.
Yeah,
Right? And
everybody
you
gets an
just
award.
want to, it makes you want to chew glass.
Yeah.
It's like, no. Teach kids that sometimes life is going to be hard and disappointing. You have to teach them that.
Yeah.
Or when it is hard and disappointing for the very first time because they're no longer protected as adults, they won't know how to deal with it.
That's why people pull out a gun at their work when they get fired and start shooting people because they are so offended by the idea that they weren't special. All of a sudden, the only thing they're special at is first place for getting fired, and they can't take it. And that's why there's a whole generation, as we say on YouTube, butthurt people. People who are just offended and insulted for no reason. They're oversensitive because they've been told over and over again by their parents, by their teachers, by the television, that they are unique for ways they're not. And I know I myself, in Canada, we have a program called Participaction. It's a fitness program that's designed by the government back from the 60s, I believe, at least the 70s when I was in, where every kid has to perform certain tasks, push-ups, sit-ups, all the different things, and you get awards depending on your performance. Now, I lost. I didn't even get the participation part because I couldn't do one chin-up. I was not a very fit kid. Now, I was devastated. My father was devastated at the thought of his son being a, in quotes, loser. But the fact was, it taught me a very valuable lesson. And it taught me to use my head because my body wasn't going to be up to the task. And it taught me a great lesson that I'm still using to this day, even though I'm far more fit. But kids, like, what would happen if Einstein had been taught that he was a winner in school instead of failing basic mathematics? Do you think he would have actually continued to strive to work towards the things he did? No, I think that the adversity sometimes tempers you like a piece of steel and makes you harder and better for it.
Well, it kind of has to. I mean, imagine again, I have to bring it up one more time. The shock of the first time discovering that you will not always succeed if you've been protected from that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it cannot be easy, and it cannot be healthy to go through life thinking that you will always be someone who succeeds no matter what. Don't get me wrong, I've been a little bit sheltered in some aspects of my life, but there are other ways in which I've been forced to work very hard at certain things. I mean, I have a web comic that's been going for about a year and a half now, and the skills to do it and the dedication did not come easy. If anyone thinks that something is just going to fall into their lap without a lot of work, they're not thinking. They're not thinking it through. And maybe they can't because they weren't taught to. But even so, it's very deeply frustrating to see that kind of thing happen and to realize that you're powerless to give this information to people. It's the kind of thing that can only come from experience.
Yes, definitely. Well, you see it in child actors and musicians all the time. You're seeing it today with Billy Ray Cyrus's spawn, that Miley Cyrus. She has been taught from a very young age, from probably about age 6 or 7, that she is special beyond anyone else. And unfortunately, the people around her have reinforced this. And she has been given celebrity for no reason. They computer alter her voice to make her sound like she's got talent. And now you see her taking snapshots with her camera in almost nude photos when she was at 16 or 17, smoking the legal drug salvia. In California, it's legal, which is a hallucinogenic drug that has some very adverse side effects for people, and basically doing some pretty reckless things. I mean, Lindsay Lohan went through it. She was another child
Oh,
actor.
man, did she ever.
She was told by all her yes men and her mother, who was a stage mom, a classic stage mom, that she's special from the get-go. And this kind of does go back to atheism. Is like one of the things that was really hard for me, even though I was an atheist from about age 6, is the idea of oblivion. That when you die, you go nowhere. That was one of the hardest things that to get over all woo-woo, all the mysticism of transcending, and you have a soul and all this stuff. We all want to think that we have a never-ending part of us. And when I had to sit down and finally dig up the concept without pot, people, but you sit down and think, when I die, what happens? And I went, you know what? I go nowhere. It's like shutting a TV off. Like the computer goes off and the memory's gone. What made me special or different than anyone else is gone forever. And it was hard. And it was devastating at first.
One of the things that, well, personally, it bothers me quite a lot about the notion of an afterlife is that it gives people an excuse to be lazy in this life. And if this truly is the only life that you get, and you go through it thinking, oh, I'm going to get somewhere else. I'm going to go to heaven. There, it's no big deal. I just have to get through this life. It just, I don't know how to react to it. You know,
Well,
I don't, I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm frustrated all at the same time by that very concept. I mean, this is the only life I know I'll ever get. I want to make the most of it. That's why I'm pursuing some of my dreams right now, like having my web comic, for example, The Adventures of Kinnear Baxter, which you should all be reading, by the way.
yes.
And you know, I mean, there's just all these people that are going through life. It's even worse than just thinking, oh, I'll live forever at God's bosom or whatever the hell it is. There are some people who actually think they have to deprive themselves of pleasures in this life. People who think that they have to have a really miserable time, that they have to suffer or they won't get into heaven. And I'm sitting here
Most.
thinking, this is the only life you get. This life is finite.
Yeah.
And if you go through it being miserable, expecting more later, and then you don't get it, well, you'll never know because you'll be dead. But at the same time, think of the waste. Think of what you could have done. Hell, if there's no God, think of all the Sundays or Saturdays or whatever your holy day happens to be that you could have spent enjoying life. Just having or doing good works if that's what you want to do, you know, if you're not into self-pleasure, or and I don't mean that by masturbation, although you could do that too. If you didn't spend all those holy days, all those Sabbaths or whatever, sitting in some holy building or on a rug or whatever it is you do to pray, if you didn't spend all of that time wasting your time praying to nothing, imagine what you could have accomplished. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be borrowing trouble. Maybe I shouldn't be thinking so hard about other people's lives. But at the same time, what you do in your life affects what everyone else does in their life. And if you're spending all of your time wasting it on your knees praying to nothing, or worse, trying to make everyone else's life more difficult because of your religious beliefs and there is no God at all, well, think about the cumulative effect. Think about that.
And think of all the people that you've indoctrinated into a dead-end way of life. And religion has always used this as a tether for slavery, to keep people down and out of the race. The rich loved religion because he could say, look, in the next life, you're going to be better than me. Let me have my money in this world. And you toil, you struggle now, and God or reincarnation or karma, whatever you have, will raise you up and you'll be better than me. And while they're sitting high on the hog, eating well, and for 80 years they have prosperity and a smile on their face, these peasants have this illusion that they're going to do something better. So they've got missing arms and legs. Like in Tibet, one of the things that I always hear people say, the Dalai Lama was great. No, he built an entire kingdom on the blood and bones of the people under him, and he kept them down by saying that karma will raise you up and you will end up in a nirvana state of bliss eventually. Not this life. No, you got to work this life for me, for nothing. So it's always been a way to keep people slavery. Even back in, like, people like, say, Vikings. If you were a good warrior, you could come back to Valhalla, a wonderful place with all these great women. And it was a way to keep the warriors fighting at their best, because they know if you're going to die, if you don't believe in an afterlife, death is not a great thing. So you're going to think twice before you go into battle. But if you tell them, hey, there's a warrior's heaven, great, party on.
Well, one cliche, I watch a lot of science fiction. Those of you who know me on YouTube, you know that. Hell, you've probably seen the Rebel Alliance tattoo on me. But one of the expressions, and you usually hear this coming out of people like Worf, but, you know, on Star Trek, but you'll hear it out of other people on other sci-fi shows. It drives me up the wall when they, like, look around and they're about to go into some hopeless battle and they go, today is a good day to die. Oh, that drives me up the frickin' wall. I never want to hear that again, ever.
They stole that from old Roman.
Never use that or I will hunt you down, I swear.
That saying is thousands of years old. It's been carved on stone, today is a good day to die. I mean, the Vikings, the Romans, the Greeks, you know, everyone's used that because it's a great way to get people hyped up.
Just once, and I may have to do this in my webcomic at some point, because of course my webcomic is sci-fi too, but just once, I'd like to see someone look around, they're about to go into a hopeless battle, and they go, wow, today's a really crappy day to die. You know, just once. I've never seen that. It's kind of like how I've never had someone go like, energy surge, captain, off the port bow. Oh, really, Ensign? How strong? Off the scale, sir. I want the captain to say we need a bigger scale. I've never seen that one either.
But it's the saying it was a lousy day to die. They actually had Worf say that once when they survived, and he said maybe today wasn't a great day to die. You know, basically it was again an anti-cliche. So again, it was still cliche. But yeah, the whole point is that the whole idea of an afterlife is used to keep people tethered down and not worried about the mundane tasks that they do for their oppressors. Jesus was big into slaves. He owned a slave people. And don't be telling me that he was some sort of like indentured servant, okay? Read the freaking Bible. The whole idea is that Jesus had a slave. He told slaves on more than one occasion to be good to your masters if they believe in me, because you will get to go to heaven and have a better life. He was telling the slaves, patting him on the back and saying, good slave, keep working yourself to death, because when you die, I'll reward you. Wink, wink.
They lampooned that on an episode of Red Dwarf back in the day, where Crichton, the robot, the mechanoid, was told that he would go to what they called Silicon Heaven after serving the humans for all of his existence. And, you know, it's like, wow, okay. So they go through their entire mechanical lifespan thinking that they're going to get some reward after serving humans this whole time. It's just like, wow, talk about a big honking lie. You tell people to console them with their lot in life.
Yeah.
It's kind of sick and wrong and horrible if you really think about it.
Yeah.
It makes so much more sense if you realize that religion was made up by humans. Yeah. I mean, come on. Do you think a god would tell people, oh, yeah, accept the short end of the stick and you'll get into heaven? Or do you think a person who wants to forestall rebellion is more likely to say that than God? Think about it. Which is more likely?
Yeah. And the easiest way for people to even to think about it is like, what does a god need with your money, your food? That's how the priests got to keep the make money and eat. They would say, okay, give a donation to God, in quotes. Basically, you're giving it to the priest. The priests make all this stuff up. They've written and rewritten this stuff to make themselves fat and happy. Look at the Vatican people. Look at them. They know they're not going to heaven. They're having heaven on earth. They're enjoying themselves right now. They have all the best of everything while little children are getting molested and while people are working themselves to death around the world just so they can have a jolly good time. They don't need heaven. Heaven's right here. And people, the whole thing is once you realize that life ends at a certain point, enjoy yourself. Leave something behind, make somebody else smile, pass on something so that the next generation of people is happier than you were, and you've done something all right. The whole idea of us is any organism is to replicate yourself and to make the next generation better adaptable than you are. And if you keep that in mind, you can be happy.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to discover that science has found some way to like extend our telomeres or give us, bionic replacements, replacement parts or something, cybernetics, all of that stuff to extend our mortal lives. That'd be lovely. Until that happens, you do have to reconcile the fact that you are someday going to die. You have to be able to accept this.
And even if they find some sort of miracle, there's no guarantee that you're going to survive forever. Even if they
Oh yeah,
extend your life,
trauma could destroy you.
getting run over by a bus, it doesn't matter how long your telomeres are in your DNA, you're still gonna die. Getting lit on fire, there's many ways, unless they make you completely impenetrable to anything. And even then, what kind of a life is that? If there's no excitement of doing something interesting or new, eventually it's going to get boring anyway. To make the most of what you've got now, folks, is what we're getting to. And I think we
Yeah,
should get on to the
oh,
next.
exactly. And one group of people that would love to make the most of their lives are gays serving in the military.
Yes, and they have to have
Because
a
let's
chance
face
now.
it, I mean, imagine having to hold back, hold in who you are because other people are either scared of it or weirded out by it or have religious objections to it. Nobody has had a harder time of that. Well, okay, probably some people, but people have had a very difficult time of that in the military, at least in the United States. The don't ask, don't tell rules, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with, have been repealed. The
There's like
vote was taken,
17.
and now gays are allowed to serve openly in the military. I need to look up the details to find out exactly how this is being implemented, but it's still damn good news.
We went to the president. I know he stayed around. It gives me a little bit of room to think he might have hope after all. His family went to Hawaii for their vacation. He stayed behind to make sure this went through. So good for you, Barack Obama. I don't
Well,
care
it's
what anyone
about
else says.
time. I mean, I'm not going to be bashful about saying that I have very little confidence in this president at this point, but that's a discussion for another time. The point remains that now, okay, I actually have some issues with the notion of gays serving openly in the military that are personal. If nothing else, I like the idea of having an easy out. There's been legislation out there that's talked about A, bringing back the draft, and two, possibly drafting women. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, I'd love to have the easy out of saying I'm a lesbian, which is true. I am a lesbian. But now that's not a way out of the military, and I would have to like pretend to be crazy or something to get out of it. But that's just a personal thing. For real, for the macro world, the larger picture, it's good that gays can serve openly in the military, cannot be kicked out. We can't lose valued personnel simply because of their sexual orientation.
And the
That's a
point,
good thing.
and right now, nobody has been drafted. When 9/11 hit, a lot of people signed up on the spot, including, of course, the world famous the football player who got killed in friendly fire from his own people, who
Pat Tillman.
Pat Tillman. He went against a huge contract, millions of dollars, and he went into a basic minimum wage job of the most horrific type of violence. Just so he could protect his country. I mean, you got to give people credit for that. I mean, he didn't have to. Nobody had to in this. People all signed up. Not one person was drafted in this war. And a lot of them, at least 10%, going by statistics, were gay or lesbian. And they had to keep it to themselves if they wanted to keep a career of any kind. One word to the wrong person and they're out. The one thing I know is that with the way people are, the nature of the beast, so to speak, is that even if they do come out, they're going to end up with a lot of flack. Even if the law says you can't get kicked out, there's going to be a lot of these so-called macho people who are going to make their life a living hell. So you're still not there yet.
I'm not so sure about that. They did, I mean, there will be some for sure, but they did a study before they decided to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and they found that about, I think it was 70% of the military just doesn't give a flying fornication. They're like, gays in the military, whatever, I don't care. A very large number of them said that. I'm not sure that they will actually have that much trouble.
I think it may be like anything, like a not in my backyard kind of thing, though, is that they might think, okay, well, they can be gay somewhere else, but in my platoon, no. So I'm, you know that 80%
of
the people.
That. Still, I've had friends who've served in the military. I've had friends who've served alongside people they knew for a fact were gay, but were also in the closet. And the vast majority of them were like, no, it's cool. It's like this open secret that corporal or private or whatever, fill in the blank name, is gay, but no one talks about it. No one cares as long as they do their job. That's a wonderful attitude that a lot of the military personnel seem to have. Let's face it, the main objection to gays being in the military, as much as they protest that this ain't it, the fact remains that most of the objection is religious.
Yep.
But then even the religious fear of homosexuality is fear. It's, you know, it's terror of the other, or even worse, terror that you may be that hated other.
Well, and I really hope you're right on that, because with 80% of the population in the U.S. being religious, and of course the Book of Leviticus saying that it's an abomination to be gay, I'm afraid for some of these people's safety when you've got people who are the most, they consider themselves the most macho, which is not a positive thing, folks. Macho is not with weapons standing next to you where you can get friendly fire. I just really hope that when they do start to come out that they're going to be treated better than, unfortunately, my cynical side says they might be.
Well, I'm not entirely certain that even the 80-82% of the United States that is religious is necessarily homophobic religious. There's this one YouTube user, Raven Blaze, who went out to this, she went out and filmed a bunch of like religious, I don't know, it wasn't a convention, it wasn't a fair, it was like a street fair looking thing. And she talked to a bunch of the religious people that were out there about their feelings about homosexuality. And a number of them, I don't know how they reconcile it with what's in the Bible, but a number of them said, no, no, it's a personal choice. And our religion, or our sect of religion, is not necessarily against homosexuality. So 80% of this country, 82% of the United States is religious. Not all of them are homophobic. I'm sure a very large number of them are. But fortunately, even some of the religions seem to be coming around on being afraid of the gay.
Well, time will tell. And I'm sincerely hoping that I'm totally wrong and that you are right. And, you know, the last thing I want to be is right in this, and that a lot of violence or oppression is going to happen to these people in uniform. Canada, we've completely done away with, you know, sexual orientation is not an issue. Anyone who even remotely makes a suggestion of violence against someone who is a homosexual can go to jail. And some people may find that draconian, especially libertarians in the U.S., but the fact is that I find it a positive thing. It's not misused or abused. These people who do these kind of things are proving themselves to be violent and antisocial, and they're taken out of the system before they can do major harm to anyone. So it's a good thing.
But, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Don't Ask, Don't Tell being repealed is great. My only fear is that at some point, if the administration or the Congress finds itself extraordinarily conservative again, which it might, because they voted, what was it, the House of Representatives is extremely conservative, while there's still a majority of the left wing in the Senate. I think that's what's going to happen after this lame duck session. If the right wing were to get control of both houses of Congress again, and they came up with some new military discriminate against the gays bill, we have a bunch of gay service people who have come out after Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, and all of a sudden they're in trouble and they're not in the closet anymore. I mean, I don't know how possible that is. I don't really understand how these rules work exactly, because it seems like they're always passing and repealing all kinds of crazy crap. You know, if that were to happen, I mean, how is that not a stick that looms over everyone's head? That's what I wonder.
Well, it's much like the allowing of marriage of gay and lesbians and then pulling it out from under them due to, you know, going above their heads to a Supreme Court. It wasn't exactly outing them and then putting them in danger, but it definitely was a, you know, a breach of their right. Their rights were given to them and then quickly swept away. And it happens often. But the thing is eventually at the end, it may be like abortion where it was back and forth. And finally, there was a Roe versus Wade decision. Supreme Court made a good decision and it was settled once and for all. So it may end up being battled back and forth until it gets to a Supreme Court decision where they make a final one. And hopefully we won't have a right-wing advantage to them by the time it gets there, because it will take some time.
Well, here's hoping that it definitely stays where it is, that it gets to the point where finally they realize, oh, the sky didn't fall. Okay, I guess we can live with it. Because that does seem to be the way progress has gone over the last couple hundred years, honestly, where, I mean, as much as the Congress has moved to the right, it sure seems like the country still moves towards progress more and more. So well, that could be a good thing. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see, obviously.
What people have to remember is that slavery didn't just disappear, that it was fought even up into the 1960s in one form or another through segregation. There was even Democrats and Republicans who both wanted to see people who were of darker skin than themselves kept down at a specific point. So it takes a long time sometimes for people to kind of get their act together and become human beings. But eventually it does happen.
Well, you know, it's often been said that Americans will inevitably do the right thing after they've tried everything else. Who knows? We'll see what happens. While that may be our little, if you'll excuse the expression, cross to bear, one cross to bear that Canada, your homeland, Glenn, has had to bear is the YouTube user known as VenomFangX.
Little Sean.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could kind of give an outline to people who are saying, what are you talking about? VenomFangX, very colorful name for a very colorful young man. A little background history. He's been on for over a year ago on YouTube. He is a very big fan of some of the people that are some of the more reprehensible characters that not only on YouTube but around the world are these televangelists and fundamentalist Christians like Ken Hovind, who is a strong believer that they're called young earth creationists. They believe that 6,000 years ago God created the earth, that the rains really did happen for 40 days and 40 nights, that the ark was built literally, the giants roamed the earth, all these wonderful little myths were true and literal, that everything in the Bible is exactly the way they say. Young Sean fell in for this, very easily manipulated young man with some problems psychologically, as has been proven. And what he did
we've heard stories about some of the issues he's gone through. I'm not remembering how many of them were told to me in confidence, so I'm going to hold back the really juicy ones, but I can tell you this much. I know that what eventually converted him, because he didn't start out as this rabid and screaming creationist Christian, what eventually converted him, of all things, was the movie Superman Returns. Mm-hmm. He went into that movie... I think his family's Jewish. I'm not sure. But he went into that movie a confused young man and came out a confused young creationist somehow.
And, boy, if they only knew that, they would have gotten Mel Gibson to make a Superman sequel. I mean, really.
Wow. I don't even want to picture that.
So young Sean started creating videos well over a year ago. And was very famous for doing what a lot of the fundamentalists do, is saying atheism is stupid, Christianity is right, the world was created exactly as the Bible says, the Bible is infallible. And what he would do is, when somebody would come up and say, no, you're wrong, he would do nasty things like go after their videos and have them taken down for false pretenses, pretend that they're his. Anyone who used his image, even though YouTube permits that for education and parody and for examples, he had them taken down, even though he knew, and he admitted later that it was definitely the wrong thing to do. The only thing that got him finally caught was he went after a litigation lawyer, a contract lawyer by the name of DPR Jones. He goes by DPR Jones on YouTube. Brilliant man in the United Kingdom. And unfortunately, he picked on someone who was not about to back down and who had the legal background to take him down. And so with the help of DPR Jones and some of his friends, they counseled him on what was going to happen next if he didn't stop what he was doing. He came out with a confession of what he did and told them that he would stay off YouTube for 1 year. And it's been about 1 year now, so of course he's back. Thought maybe he was going to get some help, but it seems he's right back on the same track as he was earlier.
Yeah, the thing is, so far he has not tried doing the e-begging that he used to do, because he used to ask people for all kinds of money.
And he got into this
whole weird, wacky conflict where he said, okay, I've lost my job at Blockbuster Video. I want to become a preacher full-time, an internet preacher. So I want you guys to send me $500 a month. Not each of you. Like I want 500 of you to send me $1 each every month. And then I will donate the excess. Like, if more than 500 of you send me a buck, I will donate the excess, anything I get over $500, to Sick Kids Hospital, I believe in Toronto is where he said.
Yeah, Sick Children's Hospital, yeah.
And then what ended up happening is one person sent him $500, and then a bunch of other people sent him in a bunch of money as well. And he came up with this prevarication where he's like, oh, well, I wanted $1 from 500 of you. So what I'm going to do is every donation after the 500th donation, not a dollar amount, but the number of people who donate, that excess will go to the hospital. But then he changed it around where it's not going to Sick Kids Hospital. All of a sudden it's going to multiple other different charities and all kinds of crazy stuff. And just everyone and their hamster called him out on it.
And what he ended up doing is even showing videos where he was like folding out the money and basically rubbing it under people's noses that he was going and ripping people off. He definitely was making it far too easy, as Christians often do on YouTube videos, to be able to go after them. Well, enough people who had some backing got behind him and says, we're going to call you on this and we're going to take you down. Because he would go after people, including DPR Jones, and take down their videos. Now, for anyone who isn't aware, on YouTube, a couple of strikes, people taking your videos down, you can be completely removed off of YouTube. That can be very damaging to someone who has a reputation as an authority figure or someone who has knowledge to pass. If you make a name of yourself like DPR Jones and then they take that away from you, that can be very damaging. So, of course, something had to be done.
Well, one of the things is that the YouTube user Thunderfoot, and by the way, we're getting this all out of order, but one of the things that did happen was that Thunderfoot had told Venom Fang X, look, I've got you dead to rights on this. I can have your account removed for some of the crap you've pulled. So I want you to read this statement that acknowledges that you know what you did was wrong, that you filed false DMCAs, and they were false, and that you should not do it again. And, you know, so Venom reads this statement, and you can find it on YouTube if you go looking for it.
In many places.
And then he proceeds to do it all again. He files all these false DMCAs, and every time he makes this claim that oh, no, I don't understand what false DMCA means. I just thought that this was a means of getting a video I found offensive removed and blah, blah, blah. And it's been explained to him repeatedly. So there's no way that he can claim to have not understood it. Yeah. Needless to say, after all of his shenanigans, after all of the crap he's pulled, guess who's back? And I've actually got a 21 minute, well, I hate to call it a ponage video because I don't really pwn the guy, but I certainly refute some of the crap he tries to say in his most recent videos. So yeah, check that out on my YouTube channel. It's Bionic Dance. Go have a look for that. But
I'll
yeah,
make sure
he's
the link is
back.
available, yeah.
And I don't know, personally, I really enjoyed the time that he was here because it was a hell of a spectacle. It was a hell of a drama. It was great to watch. So I'm kind of hoping we get some of the same antics again. Though, honestly, I don't want anyone to get hurt. It'll
No.
still be entertaining as hell.
Well, even when he was at his tamest, it did give a common foe to the atheist community, which is what we desperately need because we're sort of devouring ourselves, which is sad. We end up attacking each other when there's no one. It's much like sharks in the water. When you've removed the chum and you've got them all excited for the meat in the water, they begin to bite each other. And it's been rather a sad spectacle, as you say. We needed someone with a big bullseye, and Sean is it. He is the ultimate bullseye. Shock of God is far too greasy and evasive. We don't have a Ray Comfort or a Ken Hovind anymore. They've all moved on to greener pastures with more money involved. We've got a couple of people who, like Binary Judy, as she's called, Judy 10101, who is a snake water salesman, I guess you could say, in, unfortunately, my country again. Why do we keep having them come from my country? I'm sorry, people. It's not my fault. Neither was Celine Dion. I'm not going to take credit for any of them. But the fact is that we do seem to have an ex well, Australia does too, mind you. We've all heard of William Tapley, forecaster of the future who gets it wrong 100% of the time.
To
But
be fair, I think Ray Comfort is actually a New Zealander.
yes.
So, that's one way that Australia lucks out.
Yeah.
Although, poor Xena, because Lucy Lawless is from New Zealand, so.
Well, her acting career is completely her own fault. I've seen
Well.
some of her movies. But yes, so stay tuned, folks. I'm sure we'll have something on Venom Fang X in the near future because he's definitely interesting enough to pay at least a cursory attention to. Because guaranteed, knowing his pathology, he will be back with something of his usual antics. I don't believe he can resist it. I really
Yeah,
don't.
well, I'm not sure he can either. Honestly, I'm not really sure what the story is right now because I didn't think that he just had a 1 year time limit. I actually thought he had to complete a certain amount of frankly, psychological therapy to be able to come back to YouTube or something. I wonder if maybe he's achieved financial independence from his parents and that's how he's able to come back. I
Possibly.
don't know. It's going to be an interesting ride. And as you said, when Venom Fang X left and when we lost a lot of the theists and it started to be that it was just the atheists floundering around, there were actually atheists turning on atheists for a while. There
Yes.
was actually a period of time where it seemed like in lieu of a theist enemy, we kind of turned on ourselves a little.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to name any names, but that's something that I kind of regretted seeing.
Yeah.
I was not caught in most of it, thankfully. It might be nice if having Venom Fang X as a common enemy unites us again. That would be really nice.
We'll see how much damage has actually been done if we can actually piece enough of us together to become a cohesive group as we used to be.
Yeah.
Time will tell. So, but I see by the clock that we're over the hour mark, so I think it's time for anything we'd like to say in closing. One thing I could say is that we really haven't been getting a lot of input from the people. We're getting a lot of people subscribing to our podcast, but it would be interesting to know what would you, the listener, like to see us do next. And you can contact us through the aword.podomatic.com. And I do check every day and would be more than happy to answer. And myself and Kate would review over anything that people might want to bring up as an interesting topic that you'd like to see, or any comments on things you've seen, what you would like to see more of or less of. It would be very beneficial to us to get that kind of feedback. You can also reach us at either one of our YouTube channels. With me, it's http://youtube.com/user/allbabiesareatheists, or
And
Kate.
in my case, if you replace All Babies Are Atheists with Bionic Dance, you'll find me as well. One of the things we've been discussing possibly doing is an interview segment, possibly with a semi-prominent YouTuber, be it theist or atheist. That might be interesting.
And anyone who would actually like to volunteer, if you think you have an interesting story or that you have something that you need to say or you would like to debate us on, bring it on.
And also, if you're into science fiction, you really ought to read my webcomic, The Adventures of Kinnear Baxter. It's kind of a Star Wars meets Star Trek meets Babylon 5 kind of thing with a healthy dose of the Jetsons mixed in. You can find it at kinnearbaxter.comicgenesis.com.
And so, of course, if you haven't reached us through the Podomatic, definitely check us out at theaword.podomatic.com, and you can check. We actually have four previous podcasts, and we will be having more in the future. And of course,
Absolutely. These are a lot of fun to do, and
yes.
I'm sure that they are serving some of you rather well, at least for, listening purposes or even to learn a little from now and then.
Which is always nice if you can be entertained and learn something at the same time.
Absolutely. That's what things like Sesame Street are for.
Absolutely. So, for everyone, from myself and from Kate, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas. You all stay safe. As I've said before, please, people, don't drink and drive. It's one of the most easily avoidable ways to die and to take somebody with you. Just get yourself a cab. Stay safe, stay happy.
And remember, don't run on automatic. Please think.
And do it with a full tank.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.